space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Hang on, Harry Kim.
And we're here to talk about the penultimate episode ever of Lower Decks, Fisher Quest. And that led us to... And that led us to Nightingale, the Voyager Season 7 episode. But before that, exciting Trek news is that we've got more Academy, I nearly said Lower Decks, Academy casting.
Let's make this official.
Retrek news banner. And cast in Academy is none other than the man, the Irish last kicker herself, Becky Lynch, who, lest we forget, was the first woman to headline a WrestleMania.
Isn't she from the UK as well? She's British, English?
Irish.
Becky Lynch is Irish, yeah. The Irish last kicker.
I think I'm confusing her. There was another one from, I think, from Southampton, actually. There's a couple of UK ones, but very few.
Paige,
that was what I was thinking of. She stars
in very different sorts of films.
I was not aware of that. Just quickly, while we are on Retrek News, it's sort of like, it's not really Star Trek, but given that we met at Sci-Fi Weekend, just a quick RIP to the Pan Man. Some I remember him from Britain's Got Talent, but he was quite regular at Sci-Fi Weekend where we formed this pod. So shout out to his friends and family. You will rest in Pan, my friend.
Absolutely, yeah. Martin Croft. Yeah, I mean, Elliot will remember, but you all got him to send me a message when I was poorly in hospital, and he sent me a message with his pan and everything. Absolute top bloke, yeah, and really, really sad news to wake up to this morning. Yeah.
Yeah, I was so genuine. He just made time for everyone.
Very much so.
Lovely guy.
So, yes, we're going to talk about Fisher Quest then, which this was a good episode, wasn't it?
Well, actually, no, because it totally ruined my prediction of what had been causing it.
Do you know what? One thing I do think is like, A, we could still get some Tholian action in somewhere just for Elliot. And I want to see it as well. But also, I still think we are way on track to have a Wesley. Like, it might be confirmation bias, but everything would work perfectly for a Wesley cameo in the last one, at least.
Do you know who I think that would be an awesome cameo for them to get for the last one? Terry Farrell and Nicole DeBoer.
Dax.
We need
someone for the Dax symbiont.
I won't say it because it gives away, but I assumed we were going another direction, but we'll get there.
No, but I think that would be a nice little... Like, how do you top the cameos that you've done there for the last episode? And you've really got to go all out, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, but I was just thinking you could do it the suggestion was... I'll just say it. The suggestion was, like, I thought that it was, like, because of the mind melt, the Dax symbiote through the mind had gone into T'Pol.
Yeah.
But, like, the other Daxes could just be shepherding her as a new Dax. That'd be kind of cool. But, yeah, all the Daxes. I'm totally in for that. Yeah, great idea, mate.
I mean... I don't think we're going to get a lot of cameos next week. I think this week was the cameo episode and that it's going to be more in our universe to resolve it all. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. But if this is the if this is their multiverse episode that we've been speculating all season they were going to do, then I think they absolutely nailed it with this one. It was just so much fun. And before we get into sort of the nitty gritty of it, but I said last week that I was saying, oh, you know, it was a shame that we had an episode without our main crew and so late in the run. And this turned out to be that as well. But I'm going to let it off because it was so awesome. So that's where I'm at with this one.
I also think it's kind of like it felt like a bridge, like, you know, a dream. Star Trek crew with some with the weirdest, most eclectic take. Like, you know, there's, you know, you can see Bashir and Garrett getting picked by quite a lot of people, but probably T'Pol and Kurzel Dax less so. You know, I'm not dissing them, but it's yeah, just probably one most people's pick. But I loved it for that. I love it. It's not just the, because usually, like we were saying the other week, like if you've got a Next Generation kind of mirror universe thing, it's always Wesley and Tasha Yar who appear. So to get some ones which you never predict was really fun. It just gave you something totally different.
It's almost like them,
as I said, the scoop to get Jolene Bullock to come back.
Do you know there's an interesting thing about that. I'll sorry Jim, you go and then I'll do my little bit of gossip about that.
No, I was just going to say, it's like, you know, them memes that you see where it says, like, make your perfect Avengers team. And it has, like, the top lines, like, it's always, you've got $8. And, like, the top line's $5. And it's Cap, Thor, Hulk, and Iron Man. And then it's like, then you get your $3 tier. Then you get your $1 tier. It's like they've done a Star Trek crew using that, like,
yes,
you know, you... T'Pol probably cost you the most, and then, you know, Bashir and Garak probably cost you a bit, and then you just had money left over, so it's like, oh, I can't have a proper Dax, I'll have Curzon.
And it's 50p for 10 Harry Kims.
Exactly, yeah, you get one of them free.
Of course. Yeah, no, but there's a interesting thing was, when at one stage I got to interview a few of the Enterprise crew, but it was like... Trip and Malcolm, I'm sorry, I can't think of their Con Trenier and Dominic Keane. Got to interview them with some other people. And at one stage, like a less evolved younger Dragon Squee asked the kind of question, which I kind of wouldn't do now, of like, still, mustn't have been too bad having those kind of scenes with T'Pol and everything. Just very beneath me. But Con Trenier said, it's like, he goes, yeah, it wasn't everything you might think it was. So I think there might have been some tension on set, and it's interesting because she
She picked up about it. That's why she hasn't. She really fell out with them over it. She told them she literally went, and me showing cleavage doesn't make up for your bad writing.
Oh, but it's like, it's the fact that it was more kind of, I get the feeling that maybe there was tension between the, like, it sounds like they didn't maybe get on from the way he said it. It was kind of interesting because she now appears in Star Trek again, and it's in animated form where she would be recording on her own with none of the other Enterprise crew. So that might just all be coincidence, but it's kind of funny her first appearance isn't with the rest of her crew, when that suggests maybe they didn't get on personally, as well as, like you say, it's the way her
character was shit.
Yeah.
None of the cast were particularly well served in Enterprise, but she was exploited more than the other ones, I think.
Yeah, agreed.
But regardless, it's really good to have her back. So to set the scene then, we start in our universe and they're sort of talking and they mention William Boimler. There's a good throwaway thing where they say, oh, well, you know, Shax came back from the dead and he's doing fine. And then you get this thing where he's messing about with mashed potato, which I feel like that's a Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
I was thinking that's a Close Encounters of the Third Kind when you're going a bit mad.
Exactly. And then it cuts to the other universe. And we've got William Boimler, which I'm glad they've picked up this thread, because we've had that dangling since season 3, I want to say, where it was sort of implied that he joined Section 31. And though he makes a point of saying he can't name the organization. I think we can take it as read that that's who it is.
We see his badge as well. He's got a Section 31 con badge on.
That seems like that's answering all the jokes that we and everyone else is a fan's made about, like, oh, that kind of gives
absolutely,
it away. But they won't say the name, but he's wearing the badge. I think, and I think there was also an in joke to take this out of the Avengers here, where they were, or the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where they go, it's like, oh, for fuck's, I'm just sick and tired of the fucking multiverse.
I think Boimler had quite a few digs at the multiverse, and you know, primarily, yes, Marvel, but it is oversaturated. Like, everybody, I mean, this seems to calm down a bit now, but there was a point where everybody was doing multiverses.
Well, Marvel really got into it, didn't they? And they tried to make a big thing. And it's gone really pear-shaped for Marvel. And I think everyone's
like, hold on,
let's take a step back from doing multiverses. Maybe it's not there.
And it's just gone on forever with Marvel as well. It's like, we're ready for it to be wrapped up. There was another line as well that Boimler had where we're jumping about a bit, but where they find out that it's not actually a baddie who's been creating the fissures. And he says something like, oh, we're just aimlessly jumping about in multiverses without a bad guy. And that felt like a dig at Marvel as well.
Yeah, I mean, the thing annoys me is because the multiverse is amazing. I just think Marvel haven't done the best with it. It's like, it's annoying that multiverse is being blamed more than the way they've used it.
Like, it's started well with...
They've really dropped the ball. Since Endgame, there's, been two decent movies?
Yeah, probably.
You've had the Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And Deadpool 3.
I think the worst thing is it's like, because you look at something like Everything Everywhere All at Once, it does something truly different with the multiverse. It's an original concept. It's taking it on a personal level, not on the multiverse isn't the end in itself. It's about the people. So there's so much you can do with that concept. I don't like the fact this probably is going to sour people from making really decent multiverse films like that now, which is such an exciting idea. Maybe it is something to be used sparingly. It's like I've said about Doctor Who, now they've kind of done the timeless child thing, so anyone can be Doctor Who. I think it makes it less special. I think in the same way, multiverse stories are great because they're every now and again, so hopefully they'll still exist though and still kind of come through in the same way.
Like, I think the Arrowverse did multiverses really well. It was always a big...
Did actually.
It was always a big event, sort of annually. You'd have from the different universes get together, so you could have one big story with them all in, and it'd be... There's an episode in Supergirl and an episode in Flash and an episode in here to tell the big story. And they worked really, really well as multiverse stories.
And the same way the original Marvel, original few phases leading up to Endgame did it, they took their time to establish it. So when you got to Crisis on Infinite Earths and they cameoed the fuck out of it, they had cameos from every iteration of the DC universe. It was so impactful because they'd saved that. Like, the other crossovers were just... This is an excuse to bring the heroes together, but the story isn't multiverse necessarily. It built that up over time until the last one, you just went full multiverse. And just, I think there's so many lessons that Marvel could learn from even their younger selves, like the earlier Marvel.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was like it started well, like when they did Spider-Man No Way Home, that was just about perfect. And then since then, they've just not managed to recapture that. But anyway, back to Star Trek. So we get introduced to this multiverse crew, and we've got T'Pol, we've got Curzon Dax, we've got all the Harry Kims, but let's talk about Bashir and Garak, because as anyone who listens to us knows, we do have a leaning towards DS9, and this was just fantastic. I mean, it would have been great to have them characters back in any form. But the fact that they actually, as Jodie points out in the comments there, so many fan fiction writers now feel vindicated. Yeah, it was just, right, we're going to make the subtext the text. And you get the sense that those actors were having so much fun with it. It was just absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
Sorry, Elliot, what did you say? I didn't quite...
They've done it where they've got sort of like the fan fiction thing at conventions. So it isn't like this was the first time they've ever done this, but they're fully aware of how their characters acted in DS9. You could have so easily gone on and had them to develop a proper relationship in DS9 if they'd been brave enough to do it.
I mean, if you've got sensitive hearing, just cover your ears because I'm going to drop another name. But like when I spoke to Alexander Sadegh, he spoke to me sort of firsthand about the fact that he just said they should have just done it, should have just had them as a couple. I think Andrew Robinson said the same. But it's the fact that they've talked publicly about the fact they're mates and they've done each other's projects and stuff before. So it's like, you know, this is why I say it's like, look, I completely understand the argument of why some people think that it should only be LGBTQ actors playing gay parts. But I think this shows why kind of when there's an established friendship, when they've known each other for years, when there is that kind of rich, like there's that love between them. I think this is my argument for why sometimes I think it's appropriate to have, like, well, I don't, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And no one else could play these characters. So if you're going to do this story, it has to be them. And it was just great. It was just so much fun having them as this couple. But it was Dr. Bashir was the EMH version of Bashir. So presumably in his universe, Dr. Zimmerman actually finished the advanced EMH program with Bashir as the basis for it.
Of course.
And Garak has joined Starfleet and become a doctor in his own right, which, you know, he does mention Garak the promenade and things like that. So it's like, that's a fascinating universe where Garak somehow got to that doctor stage. I would like... Yeah, I'd like to see what's gone on there, but also he still has the Obsidian Order past. You know, he's got the bit where he says, "Well, I am a doctor, but not just a doctor." So that's in there.
Like,
so.
Attacking from behind because that's a Garak thing.
Well,
yeah.
Come on, we're better than the attacking from behind jokes. Come on, Elliot. No, I don't want to do that. I'm just fucking wrong. But yeah, no, it's like, I mean, I love the fact that, not only a surgeon is also kind of feels like a bit of a nod to, like, I'm just plain simple Taylor, whereas here he kind of owns the fact that he's not just that. And it's also
just a plain simple surgeon.
I think him being a surgeon as well, I think we all know that Garak's probably got a bit of experience with surgery and knowing how the body works to maybe work against surgery. So it fits nicely. He's used those kind of powers which he learned for evil for good. I kind of love that as well.
Yeah, and I just loved like the banter between them of which dimension are we going to live in? And, you know, when they got, where Bashir gets really angry, it's like, well, you can sleep on the floor tonight because I'm having in the bed.
Are we going to do that plot line all the way through now? Or are we going to...
We might as well.
The whole ending of it that you know, Garrett basically is doing it for the argument, which he
really loves, like,
and then how much he pisses off Bashir like he did in the argument.
And he said, and it is a Garrett thing. Why are we arguing? Because it's fun.
No, it's not. And him saying no, it's not, just reminded me of so many of the episodes where he would get annoyed with him when he was young. Like, I love the fact that even though you feel like they are on more of an even footing here, he can still push his buttons and that's part of their relationship. And it kind of admits that Bashir on some level enjoys that, him winding him up. Because I think because he is super intelligent, I think he enjoys the challenge of someone who can wind him up, because probably not a lot of people can, because he's... But he winds him up by being clever, not by being like, I bet some people being, shall we say, kind of obtuse, I think winds up Bashir with his super intelligence, but I think he enjoys it when it's the challenge to him to rise above it, like here.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just part of their relationship, isn't it, in this iteration of it. And it reminds me of that episode where they send Garak like, right, you're going to wind or keep Odo entertained by telling him all sorts of lies on the way out to the Gamma Quadrant. So I just thought it was very in keeping with the characters and really, really well done. The rest of the plot then So they find the other Harry Kim, and that's a great reveal where it's like, oh, it's another Harry Kim, and you've got all the Harry Kims on
it
there.
It isn't, though. But it isn't just another Harry Kim.
True.
It's a lieutenant Harry Kim.
A very rare, an ultra rare shiny, I believe.
And we find out why in this episode, and indeed in the next episode that we're going to cover today, you know. Harry Kim gets a bit of power, it doesn't work out well.
It's so low decks to make something which was a kind of a mocked feature of something, which just really, we don't attribute it to having a reason why is that, other than, I suppose, in plot, you could argue that it's because they're in Delta Quadrant, so less opportunity for promotion. However, like, to make it so it's almost like a code of the universe, you never promote Harry Kim or shit'll get fucked up. Like, maybe when he's close to retirement,
yeah,
you can.
I like that. Another, but that's it, yeah. It's like it's, you know, like the.
I was just going to say, I like when he gets being deported and he turns around and he sees all Harry Kims and he says, you mean there's more than two universes? Because the other episode we were going to cut that we were looked at maybe covering, but we talked about it years ago.
Yeah.
It's Dreadnought. And in Deadlock. And in that one, the Harry Kim that we have for the rest of the show is actually a duplicate.
Yeah, and that's the only one which would have been more perfect to covering this one. So that's the one I've been most annoyed that we've covered before, because most of them it's like because it was perfectly fit to something else, there was a, you know, whereas this one it's like I don't remember when we covered it, but I think it might have just been to cover an episode, you know.
Can't remember if we were doing Vidians or something.
It might have been me and James, because it's a long time ago that we covered it.
It is a long time ago we did that one.
Possibly.
So, the Perpetual Ensign Harry Kim is good fun. I like the fact, though, that one of them's like okay with it. Like, no, we had too much going on. You know, I wasn't bothered about getting promoted. We had the Borg. We had. Yeah. So that's quite good fun. Go on, sorry.
I was just going to throw in with the bridge crew. It's really nice to have Curzon Dex also, because it's like it is one of those characters which you hear so much about. You know that he's grumpy. You know he's got this Klingon past. But apart from seeing him die, I think it's the only time when you see him in his body. You know, you see him when they do the
becomes Odo.
But this was just really cracking. It was just really nice. Like, you know, it's like you feel like you knew him already, but this was just wonderful.
Yeah.
And it's like for him and. T'Pol to like basically him to be arguing with T'Pol and T'Pol never engaging and it never stops him. It was just delicious.
It was sort of a Spock and Bones type relationship that
Spock doing on purpose. T'Pol was trying to
deny. That's true. That's true. But like I loved how they established that dynamic between those two characters really, really quickly, to the point that it was actually quite poignant at the end. We're not covering this one totally chronologically, are we? So we may as well talk about it. But Curzon Dax dies, and T'Pol takes the Catra of Dax rather than the symbiont being transferred. She takes it like in Star Trek 2. And despite the fact that we've only had a few minutes realistically with these two characters, I feel like it's established that relationship really quickly. And it does feel like a big caring moment between the two of them.
But it's took the relation, like to say this is what, 25 minute episode?
It was 28, a bit longer this week.
Okay, well, 28 minutes, but that includes the titles.
Yeah, yeah, no,
yeah. Yeah.
And they can build relationships between characters well enough the first time we're seeing them together that it's impactful when one of them dies and how they pass everything on. It's like, this is
very
actually
good
very clever writing.
Oh, no, you're totally right.
Absolutely.
It's very it's just I just want to mention the fact it was kind of nice. I think those few extra minutes was good for this episode because there was so much in it, but they still only spent a few minutes on that relationship, as you say. And it's also kind of nice. I like it when they use stuff which is established, which has never been put together before. So the fact that they could have a joining through the mind, not through the symbiote, is perfectly valid. You know, it works on everything that's been before, but no one's done it, and it's just it's nicely put together.
Yeah, there's no new there's no new science used here or anything. Everything everything that you see in this episode has happened in another show.
It's just not been applied together in this way, and I really like that. It's, you know, it's just finding a new wrinkle and stuff which has already been established.
And then the chase down the other ship, once we meet Engineer Mariner, who comes on board, and you immediately get it's the same Boimler Mariner relationships, even though it's slightly different versions of them, which is great to see.
You get Boimler, who's obviously looking lustily at her, and she's going, oh, will you look at me like that? It's like, oh, I've just missed you. She goes, yeah, that checks. I am really great, which is so Mariner. Like, I like the fact that they took away the fact that she wants to be in life or death situations like our Mariner. But they've not, like, usually when they change something like that, they change the whole character. But I like the fact they've kept her arrogant. She just doesn't like danger. Yeah. Like, that was nice. Not throw it all out. It's, you know.
And it's perfectly reasonable that she's going to go, yeah, I am great. I think I'm good looking. I'm really friendly. I'm great at what I like to do. Get in bloody danger. Are you fucking mad?
Yeah.
Why would I want to ruin this?
And that leads us to who's been causing the rifts. And the ship is very similar to the one you get in the Enterprise titles, the round one. And yeah, when you get the captain of that crew, it was one of those weird moments because I sort of realized it the same time Mariner did. So I was like, what? Whose is that voice? Like, yeah. I couldn't quite place it. And then she's like, wait a minute, you're Lily. And I'm like, shit, it is. It's her from First Contact, you know.
I thought they were quite deft as well with the exposition on this, because if you like, it's so often where it's like they know that this is, it's a recognizable character, but not like recognizable. Like if you see Picard, you know exactly who we're talking about straight away. Whereas this one needed a bit of explanation, at least for some people I'm sure watching.
Yeah.
And it's like, so when like it's that Lily, you know, the one from the first one, just, it was nicely put in there, I thought.
Very well done. And I mean, if you'd have had your bingo card of what characters do you think we'll see in the multiverse crossover, I think you'd have been hard-pressed for someone to say, oh, I think we're going to see Lily from First Contact, you know. But it works, and it works within the context. Like, they have, oh, no, we didn't invent warp drive in our universe. We invented a dimension-jumping drive. And they have that lovely conversation where they talk about, well, Boimler's like, no, that's not exploring. Exploring's where you go out. She's like, no, we're discovering more about humanity by seeing what they do. It's just a beautiful distillation of the Star Trek philosophy, but taken from two different perspectives. It's just great.
And I like the fact it's sort of got my mind a bit, like, you know, worrying a bit, because it's like, okay, so you developed this dimension jumping, but you didn't develop warp drive as well. It's like, that's a really interesting universe. Like, what led them to do that? But, like, is the invention that, did that stop them running warp drive? It's kind of usually you'd expect maybe both, because
I think it's that they were happy with jumping dimensions and didn't need to get around everywhere fast.
Yeah. So it must have been invented in first.
Yeah.
Nice idea.
Yeah. Really, really good. And then at this point, Harry becomes the villain of the piece and he steals the ship. And I mean, that's it. It's more or less action, isn't it? From here, we've covered the
main beat. Can I just ruin the line to Pip Kim? Like, damn you to Pip Kim. I really enjoyed. Sorry, earlier.
Can we just mention the ship as well? Like, we've already said it was a ring ship, but all the interiors are Enterprise.
Yeah.
Interiors. And the nice thing is, Archer always had his beagle with him, and they've called it the Beagle. And they're going around in Enterprise uniforms, but with a beagle on.
I didn't even know.
Yeah, really nice.
I noticed the word beagle. I was like, what have they called it that? But so everything else was happening, so I didn't care. Yeah. Oh, geez, of course.
There's so many, many little bits and pieces in this episode.
And there was
an Easter egg of this and a little thing here and a little bit here.
And describing
I'll hold my hands up
nerd, like Boimler was really nice.
Yes. Like, I'll hold my hands up that I read this.
We haven't even mentioned that they're on a Defiant class.
Yeah.
I thought I did mention that at the start, no. But yes, but they are.
NX Amanda, was it?
Yeah.
Yes. And So I did get this off an article that I read, so I didn't notice this myself, but when you're talking about little Easter eggs, so Lily's jumpsuit is slightly more purple in hue, which is what they were like in the first season of Enterprise, whereas the others are more blue, which is what they were like from season 3 onwards. And it's just such a minor thing, but the fact that they've actually bothered to do that to reflect sort of both versions. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, when you watch Enterprise, unless you've got an absolutely brilliant telly that's going to pick out all those details, you might not even notice it, but it is there, just a little tiny detail.
In fairness, why would you go for blue when purple's an option, though?
Exactly.
Well, exactly.
Wasn't it Horsey's uniform, though, that stayed in the purple?
It might have been, yeah.
I'm sure there's something about Horsey's uniform that didn't change the same as everyone else's.
Maybe it fitted just
right. I'm guilty of not always paying that much attention to Enterprise sometimes, but just absolutely great stuff. And this leads to the big threat, which is, I didn't follow all the technobabble, but effectively it's either going to destroy all the universes unless they channel it into just one universe. And this is where Boimler says, well, do it to our universe because I know that I'm there and Mariner's there and I can trust them and they'll be able to deal with it. And even though he's dooming the Prime universe potentially by doing that, there's something very heartwarming about that he trusts his own universe.
And he's also trying to save a lot of all the other universes. So it's one or all.
Well, yeah. But pick one of the shit universes, pick that one from Parallels where the Borg have run amok, destroy that one.
It's an amok time over there, is that what you're saying? But anyway, I mean, the one thing I will call out, though, is that, I get the whole thing about, like, well, I know they've got it, I know the universe. But it's this line, it's like, well, as long as my double doesn't panic, you know your double, you know all he does is panic. Just write that into your plan is all I'm saying. I'm not saying that he's not right on everything else, but that bit, just like, for fuck's sake, man, did you forget so quick?
You know what? I will let that go. I will let that go as the setup for the punchline of the episode because it's great.
No,
before you get to punchline, like, we haven't even mentioned the aliens that they find.
The axolotl aliens.
Are they moopsies on legs?
The kind of big moopsies. I thought they looked like axolotls. Like,
yeah, I didn't think they were moopsies because moopsies we know eat everything, so she wouldn't say they were uber friendly. She wouldn't be so surprised. Mind you, the fact that she was surprised is like, dude, come on, Mariner. I know you're not our Mariner, but you must know about multiverses that everything's different. So it's like, well, these guys can't be evil. Multiverse, for fuck, like, I'm just saying. She shouldn't, again, minor quibbles, but no better Mariner. That Mariner is a little bit slow on that. I'm not saying it doesn't work.
To be fair, there's a lot of Harry Kims who aren't evil. There's only one evil Harry Kim. So
there's only one Harry Kim.
I actually think you're looking at, based on what we're seeing here, there's more not evil multiverses than evil multiverses.
Well, can we also, with the Harry Kim, just with the voice, was it just me? Like, I had to check to begin with if it was him because he's pitched his voice younger, but it kind of, to me, made it sound a little less like his voice because he isn't usually that ebullient. Like,
I think he's a younger voice.
Yeah,
because like Voyager's 20 odd years ago now.
Yeah,
I don't think his voice really sounds that much different. I don't think
it does because I'm trying to think how long it is since we saw him. Is it about 10 years ago now?
Well,
I've had him in the interview since then.
Yeah, well, I mean, that long. And like, if you listen to the Delta Flyers podcast, it sounds just like Harry Kim on that, you know. But yeah, I agree with you. Something did seem a little bit off.
I think he was trying to make his voice sound younger.
And
I think it's like, actually, no, you'd be better just talking as you do, because we'd recognise you, because we still listen to you in media.
And you just
that's on the director of the episode. They should have said, "What are you doing, Garrett? Just talk normally.
Sort it out." I'm not going to shake your hand.
Because William Shatner's directing.
And then
the punchline to the episode is obviously real Boimler, our Boimler, freaks out, and we get lots of bleeped out swearing.
Oh, I also think, sorry, just getting to the beginning of the episode, because these were the wraparounds from our universe. I think Rutherford's eyepiece malfunction has kind of become relevant. I think that's too specific.
Ooh, yeah, I
think
that
the multiverse is throwing them off, and that'll maybe lead to a part of the solution. He's probably picking some stuff up, which like Geordi used to on his visor.
Maybe. Could it be the more Borgified one that we saw earlier in the season, sending him transmissions or something, maybe?
Or could it be Tholians?
It could be Tholians.
Or Wesley Crusher.
It could be the Iconians. They're going to step in at the last minute to save us all.
Finally, yeah.
I will. Okay, I'm going to redo my tenor to charity bet, because like, if they have it, so it's the Prodigy crew giving you messages from with Wesley through his century thing, I will happily give a tenor towards charity.
We have an alternate theory on Garrett Wong. I think when he was on Voyager, he was trying to be a bit posh, and on this episode, he was just doing his normal voice.
I think his normal voice sounds like...
Maybe, I don't know.
I've never noticed an interview it sounding different, for me, anyway.
Right, well...
I think he's trying to use himself. It sounded so high-pitched. He was just so... Because he was an enthusiastic character, but he didn't sound like this. He didn't, you know, he wasn't... Like he had,
I think sometimes actors, when they're doing voice acting, do get a bit more ebullient because they've not got the physical side of their acting there. I think sometimes they do overcompensate by putting more emphasis into the voice performance. I don't know, but yeah, let's get him on the podcast, Will, because he's not busy enough with his own podcast. We'll go, Garrett Wong, come here, sit down, explain yourself. And also, while we're at it, let's talk about this episode, Nightingale, because it's not as bad as Deep Space Nine episode we did last week, but I don't think this is the greatest episode.
It's very half-baked.
It's half-baked, but like, we decided that it deserved a Harry Kim episode, so you're straight into Voyager.
Yep.
And to be fair, we've actually covered quite a lot of the Harry Kim episodes that would have been relevant to go along with this episode.
Hey, thematically, great pick, Elliot, because this was your pick. Great pick thematically.
Yeah, Harry.
And I think it's bad enough that it gives us a lot to talk about, which is my main thing. As long as it's not average, you've got mileage to talk about it.
There's plenty to talk about.
Like, my pick for this, why I thought it was a good pick, was one, he gets command of his own ship, which we're seeing in Lower Decks, and two, he's on the opposite side. We see that as well.
thematically, it's brilliant. Go on.
Oh, I thought it just for Garrett Wong, I thought, and Harry Kim, I thought it started off really well. There were some really nice kind of moments for them. Just everything past that and everyone else around him at the beginning just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, like, I'm going to start with a load of praise to it, because that shot of Voyager on the planet with, like, the supplies and stuff like that moving about, that's absolutely brilliant. Like, we don't see Voyager landed often, and to be honest, this episode, it doesn't need to be, but it just gives you a great visual to start the episode.
It makes a lot of sense in the episode where they're having repairs. But strangely, I've just got a brand new massive TV that's really sharp on the picture.
I know where you're going.
And this actual shot, the CGI is starting to not be standing up very well.
Well, yeah, on my and phone also...
I was watching it on my way home from work because I just ran out of time, basically.
Yeah.
And on my phone, it looked great.
Yeah, so, yeah, well, that's the thing as well. I mean, you know, and this was made standard def at a time when tellies were not as big as they are. So there is an argument that, yeah, there is an argument that the better and bigger tellies we get, the less good the older stuff is going to look. Yeah, but the concept of this shot is lovely.
There's like, I've done a couple of Voyager builds and I've got to get back to my Voyager builds, but this is one of the episodes that is used a lot for what colours things are meant to be in reference photos. Because you see things on the planet and in natural light, so you can get
that much makes better. Sense.
So this episode is actually a really, really massive episode for reference photos.
We should have known there was a model angle with yourself. I did think it was kind of it's quite funny because you got the shot on the planet. Actually, the one which I thought was it was a very, very quick thing, but it's like the moment which I thought looked a bit weird was there's a shot right at the beginning of the shot where you go to Janeway and Torres talking about the, you know, the repairs. There's this person who's right up close to the camera. And I think they were all told, right, you're in a hurry. You're doing repairs on the quick. And you know how, like, with those devices, you've got to move them slowly. Like, that's just the way they work. We always see them moving slowly. And I think they were told to move quickly. So they were doing this. Like, it's like, what if they could just do that? They do that every time if it worked quicker. Yeah. And also it was really up close on them. And I think they were like some alien. I forget which one. And it was really obvious they were wearing a wig. And that was on my small screen. It was just for a second. If you weren't really paying attention. But it's like, I guess when I was watching on the train, it kind of focused me weirdly. Yeah.
It does when you're... Yeah, sometimes you do notice stuff on phone because it's all you're looking at. Whereas on a big telly, ironically, you're probably looking at your phone as well as watching the telly. Phone, but...
There's something I noticed because I watched the episode before this as well because when I put it on, I was still pottering about in my kitchen. So I thought, right, so I sit down and watch it while I'm still finishing pottering about and I think I was making tea or something. I'll put the episodes on before it. And interestingly, they both start with the same premise that the Delta Flyer is off searching a nebula looking for dilithium.
Well, that's good though. That's continuity. That's the sort of thing Voyager should have been doing more of, is having through lines.
Well, I like the fact that it is landed on the planet being repaired, and it makes a lot of sense to crap they're going through. There's no star bases to get the repairs all the time. And it makes a lot of sense that Torres has finally gone, look, there's no choice, you set down. Oh, we are going to break down.
Yeah. I mean, I did think one of the things that they did well was they were always talking about resources, talking about like what they needed. They didn't just have them stranded and then the ship worked absolutely fine. I love the fact that was a really nice, the survival kind of feeling of it was really good.
Yeah, it was.
So like you say, Elliot, to have an episode where they go, it's like, look, you can beg, steal, and borrow all you want, but I've got to do some fucking repairs at some point. You know, it's like, it's nice to do that just before the end to fit that in.
The right, the cell is only held on with duct tape at the moment.
Yeah.
If you don't let me land and get it welded back on it, we're going to be leaving it back behind us in a minute.
And it seems sort of like quite plausible as well. It's like you've got a brand new ship at the beginning of the show. So, like, the fact that even with everything, and with kind of, as I say, beg, stealing, and borrowing, the fact they could last 7 years before you have to do something like this, that's kind of plausible. That seems about, you know, right?
Yeah.
It's another thing like is when Balana says, how long the repairs are going to take, it's what she means. And this comes back to, like, in Relics when we see it with Geordi.
He tells
Picard exactly how long something is going to take, and Scott is shocked by it. That, what, you don't lie, so you look like a miracle worker when you do it four times quicker.
Fucking love Scotty. Fucking love him. Yeah, and I think O'Brien does a bit for a different reason. It's like, look, if I say I'll take an extra hour, A, they'll get off my nuts because I never stop on this job, so I have to make up gaps. And B, I can spend now on the whole day with Julian as opposed to going home to the wife. And that's not a second thing. That is the way they wrote Keiko thing, just to be clear to anyone who doesn't watch it regularly. Can we just cover the B-plot very quickly while we're here? I just thought we may as well.
Yes, let's cover it.
Because it's
quickly.
Bullshit. It's been done before. They even did it with 709 and Kim in Voyager. They had her thinking that he wanted to cop off with her, which he did, but she went, oh, you want coitus? And he's like, oh, it's kind of, it's just so done.
Yeah, very similar. I mean, it's rubbish. And Icheb's not the greatest character ever. This thing where he's, oh, doctor, tell me how you can tell when someone fancies you. And then he's, oh, Bilana, you fancy me, you do. It's not very good, is it? Really,
it's very false. And the thing is, like, the doctor tells him to make effort, they try to brush against you. And if you watch that, where they're doing the changing the computer chips and that, and if you watch, they're deliberately making sure the hands touch. It's like they're taking stuff from each other by putting the hands in really weird, bloody things. It's like, right, I can reach over here and take it straight from you, or I can put my hand through here and go like this.
I mean, to be honest with you, I think this could have been done a lot better. It actually made me think, because we were covering Lower Decks, this would be a really great early series Lower Decks thing with Boimler thinking that they want to do a threesome with him. It seems like they could have mined the comedy.
Something like that would be funny. Yeah.
And plus, then it's referential. It's not just repeating the storyline. It's taking the piss out of those storylines, which is what Lower Decks does as well.
Yeah,
it's kind of like a repeat of stuff we've seen, not only in Star Trek, but in so many sitcoms and everything else, that misunderstanding.
Yeah. And it's not...
Yeah, exactly.
It's not even done in... It's not even done in an amusing way, and it doesn't do anything for either of the characters.
And it doesn't do anything for the story.
So, like, why doesn't he think Tom fancies him as well? Because Tom says, "Oh, you know, come, we'll go racing on holodeck." Yeah. You know.
Yeah. And it would have been so much funnier if he thought everyone fancied him. And they're like, oh, you know, again, if it, like, I think now you might even in regular Trek, you might even be able to think of, like, are they both trying to, you know, they could have played that, you know, as something.
You see, that's not a bad concept for a comedy B plot, is you start off with Icheb just wanting to ask the doctor about romance. And the doctor gives the same advice that he does. Oh, well, if they do this, this, and this, they might fancy you. And then it's a comedy of errors with Icheb meeting various people on the ship, and he thinks they all fancy him because they've done one thing or another
The captain says something to compliment him. You have your coat.
Yeah, you have everything.
Tom offers to take him racing. You have the stuff with Bilana.
Yeah.
Still in it. Exactly the same things happen, but it becomes funnier that he thinks
that's funnier. But this, no. But anyway, back to Harry. I'm glad we got that plot line dealt with.
Yeah, I thought it was better to just get rid of it now, you know.
Yeah.
Well, so it's better
back to Harry then. Yeah. So Harry's on the Delta Flyer, it gets attacked. He does the cool thing where he overloads the weapons to help them, so I'll give him that. And they get on board, the ship's knackered, and there's a... I mean, at this point, they obviously know about... He does.
No, Seven and Neelix tell him that he shouldn't be doing this because it goes against Prime Directive, getting involved.
And may I say,
yeah,
this episode, all the way through, trades on, like, because... At the end of the day, it works out a certain way. They don't do certain checks. So basically, if you were going into the situation, the reason why the Prime Directive means that you don't get involved is because you don't know, just because they're attacking that one particular ship, you don't know what the balance of powers with the war, everything else. Janeway doesn't question it later. She just goes, well, I was doing a deal with these other people, and fucking, you're going to queer the deal now. That's very Star Trek. Not like, what are the morals of this? Why are they arguing? No one bothers to ask any questions. It's just like, those are guys getting shot, so they must be the weaker party in the war. And that turns out to be true. So because it turns out to be true, the characters earlier on don't investigate. Mm. I mean, from the writer's point of view, like, it's like they take a shortcut of not having.
It's very lazy.
Yeah. They know where they're going, so they don't bother doing any checks to get there.
Yeah. And it's like, there's a great episode of Stargate that has a similar premise where they go through the gate and they fight this civilization that's under attack. And the shields are failing and they're being attacked and attacked by the rest of the planet. And the Stargate team start by helping them and then find out that they're actually being attacked and all that because the massive set of racists have been trying to commit genocide on the rest of the planet.
Yeah.
And that's why everyone's turned on them.
Because I'll even give them in the immediate moment, you make sure someone doesn't lose a lot. That's very Star Trek, I get that. But then the fact that Harry just immediately goes like, well, now we've bonded, I'll just assume that you're the good guys.
Yeah, he doesn't do anything to find out what they're actually about. And as it turns out, it's not the humanitarian mission he thinks it is.
They tell him that they're transporting a vaccine. And that's why they've got a cloaked ship. But, like, did I never bother to check, are you actually carrying a vaccine?
Apparently not.
Is it going to cause autism? Who knows? Sorry. Just on America meant there. Not. I don't believe that's a true thing, by the way.
No, I was off to say, but in all these attacks that Scotland been getting, has anything happened to the containment? Let's go check it out. What do you mean there's no containment? Why is there no containment? What? Because there's no real vaccine?
Yeah.
But these are standard things that they'd normally check, aren't they?
You'd think. It's fun, though, when he first beams over and they're all like, oh, you must be a great captain. And then he has to explain to them, no, I'm an ensign. What does that mean? It means the lowest rank on the ship. And it's like, I know that they're doing that story about, you know, he's always an ensign. But it is just like, right, we're going to have him go over and he's got to humiliate himself in front of them by telling him how lowly ranked he is.
And can we also explore that? We bring up a few times the fact that he's not promoted, as mentioned, and he even sort of calls it out. That it's like, well, I understand the situation why I don't get promoted. I'm not trying to. But one thing I will say that this just made me think is like, but you've got that episode where, considering how tight promotions are here, you've got an episode before where Paris gets knocked down to ensign. And then as soon as he gets promoted back again, and he gets promoted back again very quickly and resumes his duty before and everything. But no one got promoted in the meantime. There's no one else going. It's like, well, what the fuck? He got demoted. I've been in the frame for a promotion.
Yeah.
I fairly enough didn't take it because he was in that position. But now he's not. Why didn't I get promoted? Why didn't Kim get promotion in that moment?
Yeah,
to take up that. Yeah, position. There's so many inconsistencies to that.
Yeah,
the fact that
Tom gets in the course of the series. Tom goes from being a prisoner to being a lieutenant to being an ensign, and then back to lieutenant. And all the time, Harry's done nothing. It's just.
And he's a bridge crew member, silly. And we see other crew members die and everything. There must have been some, like, options for some people being promoted. And why wasn't Kim ever in the frame? It just really doesn't. And, like, it made me. Right. I never thought about how much this doesn't hold water.
And this idea that we're in a unique position, so we can't do promotions. Why not? You're in a unique position. So yes, that might traditionally be the role that an ensign has. But there's nothing wrong with having a lieutenant, given that you've got a limited crew and that there's no opportunity to get other crew members. Yeah. So that would be perfectly reasonable to have a lieutenant doing a job an ensign used to do.
So what you've done, you've kept him as an ensign. So literally, even though you're letting him sit in command at times on night shift on bridge, every single crew member outranks still.
Yeah.
Yeah. And can I throw out two other things here? But one is like you guys say, and it's like also when they get back to the Alpha Quadrant, what do they catch up on the promotions they've missed? No, they'll get one promotion to the next point, and they missed all those promotions in the meantime. And also, like, the fact that they kind of later on in this episode basically make out like he's making rude decisions because he's never been in command in this way, it sort of ignores the fact that he has done night shifts where you'd at least surely bust out some of these problems. He would have some point take, like, we've even seen him take command in those situations and everyone hasn't swooped in to save him. So he's not, he just forgets all of that in this episode.
Yeah, it's one of these really badly written episodes again where they've forgotten.
Yeah, it's
almost like you've got a writer who's coming on season 7 who's forgotten or doesn't have a clue of anything that happened in the first 6 seasons.
Yeah, we want to tell this story
about this. Oh, an ensign. Oh, an ensign, so they'll have no command experience.
Yeah. And so they regressed Harry's character to tell the story, which is a bit...
Like, I almost watched this episode and I thought, at the start, I thought Harry's playing a really good character, really good. And then I switched off halfway through the episode or the middle third of it. And it's like, yeah, that's the part where Harry's in charge, which... And I wonder if it's just I'm picking up on it and I've seen it that many times. It's like, no, this is awful. It's not right.
And it's then at also,
the end again, it gets a lot better again.
It's they make him into a complete dick because the story they want to tell is he's in over his head, he overreaches, and he gets knocked down a peg. But to do that, they just make him a total idiot. Like, he goes over to the ship and he goes, I've brought my clarinet with me. Like, what? Are we joking? That's absolutely ridiculous. I know they paid lip service to it. And he goes, oh, well, got to make it look like it's my, you know, you might be here a day. Like, don't be so stupid.
And also, it makes so many mistakes that it's almost like the worst mistakes of Voyager in one episode. So they've got all those things. They've got a Neelix scene which didn't need to be there, where he's going, it's like, oh, you have to be decisive about your soup order in case you're in because you're in command now.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Fuck off, Neelix. Yeah. It's the most, like, I think Neelix, when used correctly, was actually an okay character, but it was so often he was just made a stupid, annoying character so often. But he didn't have to be. It's not like he's innately bad or he's a bad actor. And you've also got, like, Seven, in her first scene where she talks to Harry, she lays down what he's doing, and it does nothing to the plot. He doesn't react to it. It's not kind of like, doesn't forward her plot. It doesn't do anything, like, does nothing. And then she later on basically does sort of similar thing, if not the same. And then it does, like, why have the first one then? It did nothing. Like, it was just pointless. And it's that kind of thing of also the way that female characters treat it. It's like, oh, we'll write her into the scene to do this. Will it make any difference? No, but she'll have some lines. That'll be nice. You know, like, they think that's progression from Uhura when she had so little screen time to give her this kind of, like, scene which does nothing. It's like, it's still shit.
Yeah, it's... Like I said, the bit with Neelix is ridiculous because Neelix says that. And like you say, instead of Harry just going, oh, piss off, Neelix, he goes, no, plumbing soup and make it hot, Neelix. The cook has taught me how to be a captain. And then when he's on the ship and he goes, I feel like I was born to do this. What's given you that idea? The fact that you've put your clarinet in your room. So at this point, you've done absolutely nothing.
Yeah,
and it is just that they want to hit these beats. Kim is overconfident, but they don't do it in a way that feels earned or feels natural or feels true to the character.
We're third of the way through the final season. We've had a lot of episodes to get used to Kim. So you're literally you're showing this character out of his normal character, how you're not showing his normal traits. And that's why I think it's a writer who wants to tell a story of an ensign taking on the captain's role and overshooting, and the band's Harry in there, without actually doing the research of what the character's development has been for 7 years.
I'll also go into the pointless cameos. Oh, sorry, Jim. Off to you, mate.
I was just going to say, if they'd done this in season two and more or less hit the same beats, then you could have had, well, that's a reason why you're not going to get promoted as quickly, because we gave you a chance and you overstepped, you weren't good at it. Maybe one day, but you've a long way to go. But this is a pretty pointless story to tell at this stage in the show's run as well. Like,
I think they're also doing that, like, another kind of pointless, if you like, cameo from crew members who don't really have much to do in this episode. So we've already mentioned Paris's later appearance. But it's like the first time when he appears and he's talking to Kim and he goes like, he says, I don't know how to say this, so I'll just say it straight. You're always Captain Proton and I'm always Kid K, whatever the name is of the psychic. And I'm like, you're still not saying it plainly. You've still used a metaphor. You've just said, let me just say something to the point. And you still use a metaphor, you idiot.
To be fair, with them two, that probably does make sense, because them two do hang out on the holodeck a lot.
Oh, I know, but don't then say you're saying it like, I don't know how to say this, so I'll just say it simply. You're not, you're still using a method. Sorry.
Yeah, you're right.
Linguistically, it pissed me off, I guess.
Yeah, you're not saying it simply. You are, it's like, no, this is for me, for my development.
Yeah, I don't care how you say it, but don't say you're saying it simply and then don't.
Now, let me say this metaphorically.
But
it's not, once he gets on the ship, he isn't a good captain.
He makes all the typical mistakes that we've seen in lots of shows, like, I'm overstepping as being a captain. I'm off to do it instead of giving the orders. And somebody said, going, no, you have to do this, and teaching them with the wise words.
Oh, and let me add to that as well, because it's like, not only is that, like, they hit you over the head with it so badly, whereas you could have done it subtly, whereas, like, as opposed to him doing it all himself, he could just be like, someone makes a suggestion, he goes, oh, no, I think we should do it like that, and just do a few of those, and then it might not be as, like, it's pretty obviously there, but it's not over the head. And also, the thing is, after he learns his lesson, at the end, the plan which they go with is his still. They don't even go with someone else's plan. You don't even solve what you've gone out to hammer us over the head with, and you don't even use it.
Well, no, it does let the crewman press the buttons himself.
That's true, he does. Yeah.
Exactly. It's still his idea.
But this is like what we're saying. We've seen him running the night shift. He's been in command of Voyager. And he doesn't get up and go, right, change heading. Hold on, I'll show you how to change heading. And all that. He has been in the situation many times where he's used to telling crew members what to do and them doing it. He doesn't stand over them and go, I'll do it. I'll show you how it's done. So we've got established character traits and behaviours not being followed in this episode.
Yeah.
Even if they'd done it another way, as opposed to making it the lesson of, like, him in command in general, the fact that he's so used to working with this crew, which he's worked with for 7 years, and they are an inexperienced crew, and that's why he doesn't trust them, that would make a bit more sense. And as you say, be a bit more consistent with the character.
It's completely out of character.
It's not great.
For a Harry Kim episode, is actually really badly served by the writers.
Yeah, yes. And it does all get resolved, and he does manage to save the day for that crew. And he says, we're going to surrender, but then he says, I'm going to blow up the ship.
His ensign is really impressive, because he gets it. Oh, we're using their weapons against them, which is
which
the Delta Flyer at the start.
It is. Yeah. So that's how clever Captain Harry is.
So it's proven he is a great captain to that ensign.
And I feel like, again, we still don't resolve the fact that Janeway has done this deal with, like, again, the people which we've just, without doing any checks, we just know they're the bad guys. And she's still done that deal with them. I don't think they say anything about that not still happening.
No, not really. They just cancel it. And Harry...
Or he'll kill you.
And Harry don't get more of a bollocking for that. It's considering he probably should. Like, you know, we needed them supplies. You've made a right tit of this, Harry.
But again, that's another wrinkle they could have had it to make it had.
You know what this means? We're going to have a third episode in a row that starts with you and the Delta Flyer.
Yeah.
Dilithium in a nebula.
And if they
what we should be doing is looking for coffee in their nebulas, not bloody dilithium.
Yeah, that shows how far the fuel crisis has got on Voyager. Episode 3, we're looking for coffee near the end of the season, dilithium. Sorry, Squee, go on.
No, I was just going to say, it's like, even if they had, like, even though it would be a storyline they've sort of done before, it would have made more sense and would have upped the stakes a bit if Janeway was also dealing with a quandary of like, well, we need this stuff, but we know Kim's established through like ESP that these are the good guys and these aren't, like, you know, the moral quandary could have been brought in. She just doesn't give a shit. It's like, I was doing this deal with him, that might fuck it up. I'll tell you what, do it on the slime, yeah, whatever, I'll just continue doing the deal.
There's the bit where they go, well, hang on, we've detected humans on this ship, and she goes, oh, I can explain that, and they go, no, you've got to leave, and she goes, all right then. It's underdeveloped, that. You know what we could have done? Cut the whole Echeb storyline and we could have developed that side of it more.
I wondered, like, at this point in Voyager, we had some very expensive episodes kept happening. And I wonder if this is just one of those victims of, here's the cheap one that we're not going, that's just going under radar while we're spending all our time on this other episode.
Yeah, I mean, and I think sometimes, with the exception of Deep Space Nine's seventh season, you know, sometimes a bit of lethargy does creep in your final season a little bit. It's not the greatest.
What it felt like to me was, like, it's almost like a experienced writer started off and goes like, right, we're going to have Harry being a bit more confident. He will kind of have this conversation with Janeway where he shows he's got the kind of, like, mustard to do it. He says something about, like, you know, it's like, he does challenge her a bit. I thought that was a really nice scene, some great moments. And then they've gone, it's like, right, okay, well, we've got the bones of it. Oh, shit, I've got to go off and help with the finale. Tell you what, Muggins over there, young staff writer, you take it up. Yeah, well, it's basically a runner, like, you know, who's been on YTS scheme. You do it, YTS. And the YTS guy is, of course, played by the guy from The Simpsons who's always doing the odd jobs, like, oh my god, it's happened again, Mr. Krusty. Yeah. He's working in Krusty Burger or whatever.
And then it finishes with, oh, he's not sure what food he wants again now because he's not a captain anymore. Because that was the pivotal episode that we needed a call back to at the end.
Yeah. It's a good idea executed very badly.
It's like he's playing. Let's just say for argument's sake, I know it's 7 years, but it's like, let's say for argument's sake, at the beginning he's 20 and he's nearly 30 at the end. It's like he reverts to playing a 20-year-old who's been given command for the first time.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
To be fair, by this point in the character's arc with the actor and in the final season, you should be able to turn around to the director and writer and go, hold on, that's really our character. I would not be doing that at this point.
Mind you, he got very much annoyed because I remember reading at the time, he asked to direct an episode in the last season. He was the only actor at the time ever to be turned down for that.
Yeah.
So I think he wasn't treated well. So maybe he
didn't if you see Garrett Wong at conventions, he will regale you with. I don't know if his relationship with Paramount has thawed, you know, with this reappearance, but certainly when we saw him a while back, he had a few things to say.
Yeah.
What I do want to shout out, and again, this is a waste of a great guest actor, but Ron Glass of Firefly fame is in this episode, and he's just a great screen presence, whatever he's doing. he isn't doing a lot, but it's always nice to see him. And that about does it, I think, for Nightingale. So we will be back next week to talk about the finale.
Can we just make sure we let everyone know?
Program note.
Because it's Christmas Christmas Day next Wednesday.
Yep.
Let's be honest, we are not going to be doing a live show at 6 o'clock on Christmas Day.
We are.
And you will be watching this anyway.
You'll be doing family stuff. We'll be doing family stuff, etc. So next week. We'll
probably be on.
Yeah. So next week, we will be out on Monday.
Monday.
We think probably 7 o'clock on Monday night we'll be going out. And then we will probably be taking a week off the week after because that's New Year and there's no new Trek. And then we'll be back in the New Year with probably the Sons of Moog.
Sons of Moog storyline we're going to look at.
Are we doing the look back like we did with Picard on Lower Decks? Just out of interest.
We'll work it out. Yeah, we'll work it all out.
Also, program note for next week, because it is Christmas week, we're going to do a thing, sort of a wrinkle, something we've done before. We're going to be giving, we're going to say what present we would give to a double act from Star Trek.
I can have Bashir and Garak now. And this Bashir and Garak, they're my choice. Yep. The ones we've just met this week. So, yes, we will be back to do that. In the meantime, you can get in touch with us. We're at RetrekPod on Blue Sky. We are RetrekPod@gmail.com. We're on the various different socials, including Retrek Model Studios.
And I actually put a video out last weekend showing my greatest idea ever.
You did, so check that out.
I have had the channel up and running. As you can possibly see behind me, the studio is still being built, but it is getting closer to being built.
Yeah.
So in the new year, it should be up and running.
Excellent. And Dr. Squee, what have we got going on the Dr. Squee show?
Right. Firstly... And I've trailed this so many times in the show, but finally I'm going to get my fucking interview with Steve Roeder up. Literally, my mum came out of hospital. For anyone who doesn't know, she had a broken hip, whatever. But I've been sorting out a house and shit, so just I haven't had time to record the intro. Is the annoying thing? The interview's there. I just haven't had time to record look shit like that. I'm going to do that after the show, and then
that is a perfectly fair excuse with your mum.
And then we've got coming up. Well, we'll talk about it next week, but me and Jim have got something Twin Peaksy coming up for the week afterwards. So the Dr. Squee show will be back in usual form in the new year with less crazy shit hopefully happening.
And thank you for trekking with us this time. We will see you next time on the Retrek.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Drag off, Harry Kim. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Fascinating.